This episode is sponsored in part by Viral Sweep. When was the last time you ran a sweepstakes or giveaway? If you're worried about staying legally compliant or figuring out fair winner selection, meet Viral Sweep, the best viral marketing app for Shopify stores. With Viral Sweep, you could build, run, and manage all kinds of campaigns that drive traffic and boost your brand's visibility. Want to engage your customers? Use Viral Sweep's Instagram giveaway picker, or save yourself time with automated winner selection and prize distribution. Viral Sweep also ensures your promotions stay legally compliant so you can run campaigns without a hitch. Plus, you'll get impactful analytics and seamless integrations to keep everything smooth. Need help? Viral Sweep's support team has you covered with options for managed services too. Supercharge your customer engagement today. Download Viral Sweep on the Shopify App Store and start creating contests that grow your brand. New customers can get 50% off of Viral Sweep's annual plan. Just tell them in the live chat that the unofficial Shopify podcast sent you. That's Viral Sweep. My friends, it occurs to me, it has been a while since we've touched on Facebook ads. And how can you discuss e-commerce, online stores, selling with Shopify without talking about Facebook ads, Meta ads, Instagram ads? Because that is typically, you know, one of the number one traffic sources for paid acquisition for a lot of stores. And it, like any other software product, it evolves continuously. They're always adding new features, changing things. But man, is it complicated. It has been years since I have logged into Facebook Business Manager. And you know what? Ideally, I would prefer to keep it that way. So we need an expert, someone who can help educate us on, you know, what's new, what's fresh with Facebook ads. And to do that, we're going to have a longtime recurring guest, Kurt Bullock from Produce Department, who runs a Facebook ad agency, Meta Ads agency, that specializes in e-commerce and Shopify. Kurt Bullock, welcome back to the show.
Thanks, Kurt. Thanks for having me.
I am happy to have you here. And just to be clear, since we're both here and on video, despite having the same first name, we're different people. I did have a prospective client once who was like, "Oh, I thought that was you with a pseudonym." Like, what? That doesn't make any sense.
Whenever I'm on email threads with you, I always put KB or Kurt B, you know, just to keep the confusion level down.
Yeah. It's like, you know, if we were both named Brian, I don't think the same thing would happen, but oh well. All right. Totally unrelated. Okay, so how long have you been doing Facebook and e-com?
I was just looking back. I think it's been about 10 years that I've been doing it for e-commerce.
Any notable clients in there?
I mean, some of my favorites have been ones that I've partnered with you on. Like Hoonigan has been, you know, an amazing client. Yeah, Hoonigan was just a lot of fun. A lot of the brands that, you know, as I got into this and started working with different clients, there's a lot of like dark horses, people that are spending a ton and doing a ton of revenue, just, you know, stores that you wouldn't know to look at, spending $60,000, $70,000, $80,000 a day on Meta ads, you know, and you would never know. One of them that I worked with was selling fruit online. It was wild. I didn't know it was possible.
I mean, those levels of ad spend would make my eyes water. But yeah, I'm not in it every day. I'm not dealing with the ad spend. I'm in the online store. I'm like, just bring me the qualified traffic, please, and then, you know, we'll try to convert them. So, okay, doing it 10 years, Facebook ads, harder, easier, the same, different. What's your take?
I would say it's definitely different and it's a little bit harder. It used to be that, you know, it was more technical media buying. It was all about getting in there, finding the right audience. You know, let's try this different lookalike audience. Let's try this different time window for this retargeting audience. Most of that has gone by the wayside now. And it's mostly about your creative. It's not so much about finding pockets, yourself, new audiences, but it's helping the algorithm to find those pockets. And so it's sort of steering the algorithm differently than you used to. Before it was more direct, and now it's more indirect, you know, through your creative.
And in the past, you know, we would get, so oftentimes we could get better results by dialing in, you know, targeting, doing interest-based targeting, defining the demographics based on what we knew about our customer. It seems, you know, from the outside looking in, it seems like today it's much better to feed the algorithm and give it as many positive buying signals as you can for it to work with, and then let it do the actual audience selection.
Yep. Yep. And that's becoming even more the way with Andromeda.
Ooh, what's Andromeda?
So yeah, Andromeda. It's what Meta's calling, it's their ads retrieval and delivery engine is sort of how they refer to it. And it's using AI behind the scenes in ways that it wasn't before. And so it's essentially the model behind what you see, when you see it, and why you see it. And that's sort of all Andromeda. It's a combination of these massive investments Facebook's putting into hardware. And then there's a model and systems component to it. But just this year alone, I think Facebook is slated to spend $65 billion on AI. They're opening a new data center. I can't remember where it is, but it's 4 million square feet, which is like 27 Costcos lined up side by side, just of racks of servers.
And this is all to run, you know, surely not just Facebook and Instagram, the app. This is for Llama, their big AI, their LLM, right?
Right, right. So they're working with, you know, specifically as it pertains to like just the ads, they've put together a partnership with NVIDIA. And so they're using this like Grace Hopper chip combo, which I think is a CPU and a GPU combo. And then they've got their own purpose-built chip. And it's all changing the way it was really built because, you know, Facebook sees the number of creatives exploding. And they're enabling that themselves with these AI enhancements. You go into Ads Manager now, it doesn't let you just publish an ad without asking you, you know, if you want to have AI enhance it 10, 15 different ways. And if you turn those all on, then each of those is a new ad variation. And so the number of ads is just exploding. And then Facebook is really building everything in the direction for that to happen. They're encouraging that and saying that that's the way forward is increasing the number of ads. And of course, it's not just about number. We'll talk more about that. Quality's obviously going to be important, and you have to have some strategy behind that.
So it sounds like more things are happening automatically for me here. Is this part of it? The thing I hear a lot about, and I see argued and discussed, is something called Advantage Plus campaigns. What the heck is that?
Yeah. So they've undergone a few changes. It's still the same acronym, but now it stands for something different with this. So it used to be Advantage Plus Shopping Campaigns. Now with Andromeda, the latest model has come out. It's Advantage Plus Sales Campaigns. And basically it's their, they call it their full funnel campaign. So the idea being that before you might have sort of top, middle, and bottom of funnel audiences broken out into different campaigns, you know, segmented that way. Now with this full funnel campaign, Meta gives you these segments. So you can go in and you predefine what a engaged audience looks like. And so you could say, hey, that's my Klaviyo list. That's my website visitors. That's people that engage with the Facebook page. They let you set up your customer list. And then when you run any campaigns now, you can do a breakdown sort of with this full funnel approach, right? They give you visibility. So you can see, well, how many of these customers that converted are new customers versus repeat customers versus people from my engaged audience. And so that's all possible in one campaign now. And that's really the, you know, now when you, if you're on the latest version, and they're always rolling, you know, I have three different versions of ASCs in three different ad accounts. But if you're on the latest version, there's not even an option to select something other than this ASC if you want to do purchases. It's just going to be the de facto campaign type.
So is this the default? If I'm setting up ads myself, I should just go straight to this?
You know, it is. And like I said, there's two different types now. So if you're in the latest version, you won't even have an option. It'll just put you into the ASC. And it, you know, it used to prompt you, do you want to do like a manual campaign, which, you know, they put sort of in brackets, you know, this might suck essentially. Or do you want to use, you know, ASC, which has got all the latest optimization. So they're really pushing you towards ASC. Now they don't even ask you if you're going to do manual. So it'll put you right into ASC, but it has changed. Whereas the sort of the version that everybody knows as ASCs, if you've been doing this for a while, is maximum automation. You don't choose audiences. It's just a broad audience. You didn't used to be able to choose age or any demographics or anything like that. Now they have actually enabled more age and region. But you didn't have custom audiences, so you wouldn't select like your last 30-day visitors or your 1% lookalike or any interests. None of that was selected. It was all just Meta doing that for you.
So how does it know? Like, where's it getting the... How does it know what audience to target?
Yeah, so it has to do with, Andromeda. And so, again, there's two iterations. It might be helpful to go into sort of the old way that it was working versus the way that it's working now, because I think it's pretty interesting, and it'll give you a little bit of insight into the way that stuff works on the back end, which has helped my team think a little bit differently about what we're doing in the ad account. So does that sound all right?
Yeah, let's
for
hear
the next
it.
Step? Okay, all right. So, all right, let's just go, I guess, one step higher. So, Meta's collecting data from everybody all the time. That's, anybody on an app. There's a constant stream of data, scroll data, view, watch time data, click data, et cetera. Okay. So this is all coming in. And in the old version, Meta engineers were coming up with what they call, two different words that you may not have heard or that we're going to use them differently. One is called features. And features, I think of it like features of a rock. You pick up a rock. Is it smooth? Is it heavy? Is it, what color is it? So it's those types of features.
And like so Meta,
there you go. Attributes is a bit, better way to probably explain it. But Meta's calling it features in their documentation. And it's the old features were made by data scientists. Meta gives examples. I'll look at their document here. They say, ads clicked in the last 30 days, brands shown in the last 2 weeks, Facebook page likes in the last 30 days. So the point being is that Facebook, data scientists were manually coming up with these groupings, these buckets, and they were time-based. And it was almost like, I don't know, I think of it like a sticker, like you put a sticker on a pic, I got a picture of me here and I put a sticker on there that says, likes mountain bikes, visited a mountain bike website in the last 30 days. That's, we'll contrast that with the new version, which is, if the old version Meta was sort of pre-processing the data, putting it in these data buckets for you, the new version, data is just opening the floodgates, Meta's opening the floodgates, and they're giving all the data to the algorithm. So the system is determining or deciding what it thinks is useful. So before, we would give them, visited this website in the last 30 days. That's what was given to the algorithm to work with. Now what's given to the algorithm to work with is all the click data, all the scroll data, all the view data. And so that's one reason why they've had to put a massive investment into these data centers, is because they're processing so much more data than they were before. Instead of being sort of like, pre-processing food for baby, we're giving him like big boy food now, So that's one thing that has changed with the old versus the new model. The other one, well, let me say this. The new version now, I guess when they upload all of that click data, is now they're including time. They're including sequence and timing data. So before it was buckets, right? 30-day, 10-day, 5-day buckets. Now they just include that timestamp on there. And so now Meta, just like an LLM, is able to sort of predict the next most logical word or the next best word to pop up. Now the Meta algorithm is using your ads and sort of finding what's the next best ad in this person's story to show up. It's all based on sequence and coming up with probabilities. So now that the new version is, and this what's interesting is I thought this is how Meta always worked, honestly. I thought they always had all this data, but it turns out they don't. And so So now it's using sequence data, and I like to think of the difference between an image and a video. So let's say that Meta's learning, the first version, they see the picture of me with the stickers on there, what I like, what I don't like, and what I visited. And we give that to, to the algorithm or to the salesperson and say, do of this what you will, try and figure out if this person's what they're going to be a good candidate for and when. Now with the new version, it's like we're giving them a video of somebody walking through, the store. And so you can, whereas before, maybe you saw like, hey, this person, you see a picture of like, they bought a hoodie and a water bottle and a pair of shoes. And that's what Meta had to learn from. Now Meta is able to learn from, I saw them walk into the store. They picked up a pair of shoes. They compared it to this other brand here. They opened their phone and they looked at reviews. before, you know, grabbing a water bottle at checkout. And so they get to learn all these behaviors. And so the model gets fine-tuned and there's a level of nuance to the customer journey that just wasn't there before.
Ever had a customer cancel an order because they were shopping while high or because they broke up with their significant other? Those are real reasons customers could cancel. And they're a real headache for both you and your customers. Why should they have to email support to change, cancel, or update an order? Enter Cleverific. With Cleverific, your customers can edit their orders themselves through a self-service portal. That means fewer support tickets, faster shipping, and fewer returns. Everybody wins. Peter Manning, New York, cut their order support by 99% with Cleverific. Now it's your turn. Listeners of the Unofficial Shopify podcast get 50% off the Pro Plan. Just $49 a month. Go to cleverific.com/unofficial and use promo code KURT50 at checkout. It's less hassle, happier customers with Cleverific. And so if I have, you know, if I'm a merchant and I have the Facebook pixel on my site, which it is probably installed with the Meta Sales channel. And so it's got this full data layer installed where it can send events back to Meta and include, a unique ID for that customer. And so based on that, like, even if it wasn't because I clicked on an ad, just the fact that I visited a site that does Facebook ad advertising, they're going to be able to build this, you know, psychographic profile about my interests, aren't they?
That's right. Yep. So as a store owner, you nailed it. Just having the Facebook channel enabled, that's going to pass all the store data back to it, and it's going to combine it with, you know. So here's another interesting thing about the new model. Some of it's new, some of it's not. But this was really interesting to me, is the way that things are stored, in Meta is it stores everything as a vector. And that was really weird for me to think about it first. But let's say that
Do we mean by vector?
So I imagine it's sort of like a galaxy, right? So you imagine a galaxy, the Andromeda galaxy, right? Okay. And everything that is happening is encoded by Facebook, and it's along these different dimensions. So in our imaginary model, right, as you picture it, it's a three-dimensional model. In Meta's model, it's actually thousands of dimensions, but we don't really need to get confused by that. I guess the important thing to think about is, let's say that I upload an ad. Meta doesn't just sort of see a block of text and an image and sort of save those for retrieval to be shown to somebody later. It actually tries to understand the text using, language processing. And it uses sort of visual processing as well, computer visual processing. So it'll understand the content. And then it puts that in a location in this galaxy. So let's say going back to my mountain biking stuff, all mountain biking stuff lives over here in this corner of the galaxy. So my ad lives there, the content lives there, and it's given sort of a weight. I think of it almost like a little sprite, like it has a color, maybe there's music playing around it.
Your version of the algorithm is much more fun.
Yeah, okay, awesome. So we'll go with that. But all right, so try not to get sidetracked with my version. What it does is it'll give it a location. The interesting thing about this is that then your user behavior is also given a location. So let's say that, I'm on and I'm scrolling through reels of mountain bike content. It's going to encode that, and they call it the word that they, this is our second vocabulary word, is embedding. Embedding is basically when Meta takes this user data or ad data and puts it in sort of a coordinate, XYZ location in this space. And the reason it does that is because it's then going to measure the distance in between various objects and use that to determine relevance.
Oh, wow.
Yeah. So like if your scrolling behavior lives in the same neighborhood as my ad and the attributes that Meta understands, my ad to have, it'll measure the distance between those. And if they're close together, it sees that as a positive signal and that, we might be a good match. And that's one... That was sort of an unlock for me, just thinking about how this is all stored. Because now all of a sudden you can think about different neighborhoods of creative and different neighborhoods of audiences and trying to make your way into those different neighborhoods, with our main lever, which is ad creative.
Okay. So what we're really, this truly is a leap forward in machine learning is what they've done here, where, because this is how LLMs think in neural networks. Like they have built a deep learning network around buying behavior and shopping behavior. That's quite clever. So we're able to get, you know, ultimately the goal is I want to show more relevant ads to the right people. You know, if I'm a customer, if I'm just on Instagram scrolling, being interrupted by ads that are irrelevant to me is more annoying than being interrupted by an ad that is relevant to me. So it's like net good for everyone involved is what we're going for here, at, you know, some huge expense to build the data center, you know, and process that data. But that's what we're going for, right?
Yep. Yep.
Okay. And so all these set like that, there's no settings for me, you know, all that stuff that the, those are just algorithm updates behind the scenes. And then I'm not choosing, there are fewer settings and toggles and buttons to press in, you know, in my campaign with this new system. And then as far as like the data layer, integrating it with my store, that's plug and play. That's the meta sales channel in Shopify. So we've ruled everything else out is being done for us. It sounds like creative's the only thing that left. What, where do I, is it the person, what do I get to do?
Yeah, I mean, so this is something that is unfolding a little bit. So as I mentioned, there's two different versions of ASCs right now. The old version, it was just broad targeting. You didn't have any targeting. The new version that just rolled out into accounts is like a combination of the old and the new. And where is it actually going to land? I don't know. We'll see. Maybe they're trying to figure that out as well. But so now they've given us access to ad sets again. So old ASC, there was no ad set. It was all just one ad set and one campaign. You would throw everything in the same bucket, let Meta sort it out. With this latest version, they've given us a little bit of that control back so we can create different ad sets that have targeting interest and lookalike targeting, and we can have exclusions. For those you know, of you listening that use the old ASC, there was a customer, let me see this, you could determine with a slider essentially how much of your spend was going to go towards existing customers. So it was the existing customer spend cap. That's, I would usually set that to 5 or 10%, because it was all in the same campaign. With this new version, they took away the existing customer spend cap, but they broke it out into separate ad sets for you. So you can exclude customers again completely like you used to be able to. So where's it going to land? I'm not sure, but I think the message is exactly what you've described. And that is Meta doesn't really want us fiddling with all the controls in the same way. It's obvious, you know, as sort of we explained with all of this sort of, the modeling and the data that they're collecting on everyone, they've got infinitely more data points than I have access to. And so really the way that I think about interceding is, if I need to teach, you know, Meta something, because if we rewind just a little bit back to the, when we were talking about embedding in vectors, you know, when you put a new ad in, there's a lot of talk on Twitter about like, you know, you put a new ad in, it gets no spend. How can Meta know if this was a good ad or not based on, you know, 50 cents or a dollar worth of spend? And I think the answer is that it can't know entirely, but what it does know is this. It will embed your ad, so it'll convert it into that vector, place it in a location, and then it will look at other ads nearby and see how those performed. And it will sort of infer the performance of your ad based on what other stuff has done, since, you know, they're all in that close sort of physical proximity to each other. It'll make assumptions. It's not always right, though. So I've thrown things into ASCs where ASC, you know, didn't spend on this ad. It just spent on its favorite two or three. And I was trying to get spend to this new ad that we had, you know, just produced. And so what I do now is I'll break them out into a separate campaign by itself, a concept by itself, with, you know, let's say three variations. So I've got one video, and I'll open with three different hooks, let's say. So it's the same concept. And I'll force spend through it. And what that does for Meta is that it adds color. So it's got that location, but that's not fixed. It actually changes the more data that Meta gets. So if you force some spend through it, it'll get a more accurate picture of where that should land. And sometimes it can unlock performance. So for instance, one of my best performing ads in this account that, you know, that I'm thinking of right now, cleaning supplies, we could not get it to spend. We broke it out into its own separate campaign, forced spend through it, And then we reintroduced it back into the ASC campaign. And it has totally changed the ad account. It brought us from not profitable to profitable. Why wouldn't Meta spend on that ad before? I don't know. You know, but it helps sometimes to force some spend through it, give Meta a little bit more complete picture, some test data to work with, and instead of just, you know, going based off of, you know, all the information that it's sort of, I guess all of its inferences about how it suspects the ad will perform.
So an ad it has not run any spend to, it can review it and then analyze it and then decide it's not going to bother.
Right. Basically, you know, so like if you've ever uploaded an image to ChatGPT, an ad, you know, in my case, I do it all the time with ads and say, like, what's this ad about? Who is this targeting? What's the offer? They're doing the same thing with the ads. And so they're storing all this data about, you know, who is this about? What's it, you know, who is it targeting? What's the product in here? What's the offer? And so it's not actually storing, let's say, the ad image in that, you know, embedding space. It's just storing what it needs to know about the image and the meaning of the image. And so that was one of the big, you know, takeaways, I guess, as I learned more about this, is that changing one word in your headline is not going to cause the ad to be embedded in a different location. It's going to show up, you know, in the same spot. It's not meaningfully different. The only way that words, you know, in your headline are going to change where it's embedded is if it has a different meaning, if it actually changes the meaning of that phrase or sentence, so that, you know, Meta has a different understanding, because it's not storing every little word. It's storing the meaning of the words. So what you need is for the meaning of the words to change. And that's how you get to a different location.
And you attempt to predict this by having a different AI review it first. You could Llama, you know, Meta's, you could use that on for free on Hugging Chat, which kind of a fun tool as an alternative to ChatGPT. You could try having it review the ads and see what it comes back with.
Yeah, so I actually haven't tried. Did you say Hugging Chat?
Hugging Chat is, it's like a platform where you could pick different LLMs, and they have Llama, which is Meta's. It's kind of fun.
That's a good idea. The way that I've done it is I put together a custom GPT, you know, in ChatGPT, and basically I included documents that explain all of this embedding stuff and links to Meta's engineering documents. And so I've put that in there, and the GPT is there just to give me different ideas about my ad. So I'll upload an ad image, or I'll upload copy, and then it'll spit out, you know, have you thought about trying this, that, and the other, so that you can make this meaningfully different. And, you know, I've actually got a list of some of the questions that I can share with everybody. We can go through some of those too, if that's useful. But
what are the questions?
So, yeah, I've got a big list. And so, you know, it's probably not going to be good content to go through all of the questions, but I'll
give me a couple of your favorites.
Yeah. I'll give you a few. So what I'll start out with, and a lot of this just really goes back to fundamentals of marketing. Okay. So one of the ways that we've unlocked audiences is just, you know, thinking about what's a completely different reason that somebody might buy this. So I've been looking through, you know, I'm always in the ad library, and there's an electrolyte brand that I follow that I think does a really good job with this. And I noticed in the ads library, they've got a ton for, you know, sort of the benefit of helps you recover, which you would expect, right? Electrolytes. Okay. So we're targeting athletes, et cetera. But as you scroll through their ad library, you also see they have, you know, improves focus, which is like maybe for keyboard warriors, right? Like guys like me that are, you know, working in the office and typing. So, you know, helps with brain fog, helps with focus. So that's another different reason maybe that somebody might buy this same product. And then they also, interestingly, they had one for like kicking the sugar habit. So as an alternative to, like, you know, Gatorade and sugary drinks. So that maybe targets a different segment, and it has you're going to land in a different neighborhood because you're talking to a different person. Right?
Yeah, very different buying reasons. You're right.
Yeah. Right. And then interestingly, I also saw they're targeting like nursing mothers who want to stay hydrated, people nursing hangovers, people that have been out drinking and partying, you know? And so I think they've taken that idea and they've executed really well. And I'd love to see how the ad account looks, you know, the results. But from the outside, it looks like they're doing a great job at finding these different buying reasons. So that's one of the first things I'll start with, is just thinking about, you know, different reasons that somebody might buy the product. There's visual style. And I think that this is, you know, not going to be new information to anybody. So this is stuff like us versus them and UGC and founder ads, right? So making sure that when I look at an ads library, I do sort of what I call the squint test. It's like, if I look at your ads library and everything looks generally the same, it's all using, you know, brand colors, and it's all like super, let's say, product focused or not product focused, whatever it is, if it all looks basically the same, that's not a diverse ad account. That's not what Meta is asking for. And, you know, you're going to be reaching largely the same audience, which if it's working, that's great. And that's part of the strategy, you know, is when you find something that works, you want to, you know, they call it explore and expand. So first you're exploring, finding these audiences. Once you find them though, you want to expand and build out. Once you find messaging that works, great. Try that messaging as an us versus them and try it with, you know, three different creators and, you know, sort of expand on that. But going through, you know, some of the other questions though, is just an interesting one was environment and location. So am I showing the product in the same setting every time? So for instance, that cleaning product, we were always using it in the bathroom and the kitchen. That's sort of what our ad library looked like.
And that would be like the obvious choice, right?
Right.
It's like cleaning
right?
a window, cleaning a counter, cleaning a bathroom.
So we started trying things like, we took it out to the park and started cleaning like signs, you know, traffic signs and like playground equipment and things like that.
Something unexpected, but familiar.
Exactly. Yep. So another, it's just getting us out of that same space that we were in, you know, and it's so easy when you're coming up with your ads to just sort of have your, you know, we're a cleaning product. This is going to be filmed in the kitchen. And so these other videos that we've created have done really well organically. So they've sort of taken on a life of their own and worked really well in the ad account as well. And I think that that's sort of an expand. We're not necessarily going to be reaching, people exist along a spectrum in lots of places in these neighborhoods, right? But I think we're reaching a different corner of the neighborhood by doing that.
Are your upsells stuck in the Stone Age? Your store runs on data, so why aren't your upsells? Outdated upsell apps make you guess, test, and tweak manually. That's costing you money. Zipify one-click upsell changes everything. Its AI engine automates upsells, analyzing every cart in real time to offer the highest converting product. No guesswork, no setup, just results. Over 10,000 Shopify stores trust OCU, and it's already generated nearly $1 billion in extra revenue. So flip the switch and let AI handle your upsells. Try Zipify one-click upsell free for 30 days at zipify.com/Kurt. That's zipify.com/KURT. Don't leave money on the table. Start AI-powered upselling today. Yeah, this kind of changes you're right, this very much changes the approach. It is important to understand the methodology here to, you know, how these deep learning networks, these neural networks think. You mentioned custom GPTs. Obviously, the algorithm itself is very AI-based. Have you used any AI-generated ads?
I have, and it's a little bit of a struggle with brand guidelines in terms of, so I guess what I'm trying to say is this. I've used it and I think it comes up with great images, but the labels are always messed up.
I know.
Changes the logo. It changes the colors on the package. And you zoom in and sometimes some of the words are just gibberish. And you know, if you just see it as an ad, you may not zoom in and see that the words are gibberish, right? A consumer probably will never know that. But when I send it to my clients, they're like, what is this?
And then when you have to like, you know, at the point, we've done this, you know, to get positioning content. And then my designer will be like, well, you know, we could Photoshop the labels on. Like at that point, we may as well just take the photo.
Yeah. But, you know, I have used AI generated ads and sometimes it does a great job. I think it has to do with sometimes the complexity of the label, or if it's, you know, like this cleaning product that I keep referring to, it has a hard time reproducing the label. But things like backpacks and stuff, it's done better with, where it's not trying to reproduce the label. It's just, it knows the features, you know, the zippers and pockets and the color and the fabric, and it can get that right. So yeah, that's something I'm definitely playing with. And a lot of times I'll do it in multiple phases. I'll maybe have the environment generated. So this is one thing we did. We'll say, hey, picture somebody, you know, on the rug, you know, cleaning with a rag, and then we'll describe the scenario. You know, there's sun coming in from the window. There's a, you know, glass of water on the wooden table, and it's a rug on a tile floor. You just sort of paint the whole picture. And it'll give me that environment. And then we can go in with our designers afterwards and place the text overlays and sometimes just lay the product on there or adjust the label.
I think that's probably the smart way to do it. Plus, it's so good for ideation. Like, you really, it wouldn't be realistic to be like, hey, we're going to take, you know, this photo 10 different ways in 10 different locations with 10 different people. You know, you could do it, but it'd be so time consuming and not practical. Versus if, you know, I could just come up with like, hey, here's 10 ideas. And now, you know, we're going to punch one up. And when it does well, okay, now let's do that photo shoot for real. I think that's probably the approach.
Yep, it works really well, like for creative briefs. So we'll do just that. We'll have AI come up with a few different images, send that to one of our creators just to kind of give them the idea of what we're thinking about, and then they create it, you know, using their own resources. So it can really be helpful in that respect.
Meta's doing all this automation, but it really is putting the focus back on the ad creative, which I like that. Makes things, it's things are still very technical, but maybe less so. As far as like, well, I, you know, if I just get the right magic combination of settings, my campaigns will do better.
Right.
But then if everything's in this algorithmic black box, have I lost my ability to test and tune, you know, to learn from findings, or is it easier? What's your take?
I think that for better or worse, we've eliminated some of the variables that we have control over, right? And so if I look at it for, you know, for better, I think sometimes we would get in trouble trying to create and tweak our way into performance, you know, with inside the Meta Ads Manager. And sometimes we were doing more harm than good. It's hard to know. And so, you know, if we're looking at this as a positive, I would say, well, getting rid of that variable is great. And we can focus really on what Meta is asking us to do, which is come up with good creative and good messaging. Think through your buyer personas and why they want your product. What desires do they have that you can meet, right? And how you can express that as an ad. So, you know, we still have a testing methodology. It's not all just throwing stuff against the wall, you know, just to see what lands. As I mentioned a little bit before, we'll launch campaigns into, you know, what they call ABOs, which is basically just an ad set where you have a set budget for it. And that's where I'll usually launch new ads. So we're testing that way. And if something works, we do what they call scale in place, right? So you can just ramp up the budget. If something works, great. Don't change it. You can increase the budget right there. It doesn't even need to be called a testing campaign, right? It's just whenever you launch something new, it's always a test. And so if it works and you have it broken out into ABOs, you have more control and you can push more spend through it. But then if something does work, I always move it into my main ASC, my scaling campaign. And so my ASC is full of just winners, right? It's stuff that's worked in those ABOs. I can feel confident putting it in there with my best ad, and it won't necessarily get spend. But here's the thing about ASCs is that they, since they're full funnel campaigns, you know, what is a funnel? It's a sequence, right? And so that's what this is all about. Andromeda is all about the introduction of sequence into the algorithm. And so,
That's powerful.
Yeah. So I think that we can feel okay putting more creative into that ASC. And if it doesn't all get the spend that we wanted it to, that's okay too, because Meta now has more nuance into the customer journey, and it's going to be inserting these ads into places, different spots in the customer journey than it was before. It's finding new places for that. And so this ad may not be the best top of funnel, you know, high spender, but it may work great mid funnel when somebody's comparison shopping. And that's when Meta might call on it, right? To come out and do that job for you.
All right. Now, after, you know, talking about this for a while, are Meta ads still the go-to? You know, if I've got a product, I've got an online store, I want to sell it, I need to drive awareness and top of funnel traffic. Is meta still the place I should be starting in 2025?
I think that it is. Yeah. When I look across, we've tried, you know, all the platforms, and nothing has the scale or the data that Meta has. They've been, you know, they've been collecting data for so long, and they've got such an advantage in that department. You know, every e-commerce store has a Meta pixel on there. So they're collecting data from everybody. And so I really haven't found another platform where I can go in and scale. So that's usually the first place I go. And then as I find scale on Meta, then I start adding it to other platforms. You know, I'll do Meta and Google, right, at the same time. Meta's kind of throwing the ball and Google's catching the ball. But in terms of like TikTok and Pinterest and those other platforms, they're great sort of ancillary platforms in general. But I think if you look in 95% of ad accounts or brands, it's going to be heavily Meta weighted. Yep, still,
for sure, that's what we see.
Yeah. You
know, it's going to be like your qualified traffic is going to be, you know, Google organic traffic, Meta ads, Google paid ads, and email marketing. And, you know, it's no one thing. It's all of those working together. But if you take one, you know, they're all going to take credit, of course, but you know, you take one out and suddenly the whole system does not perform as well.
Yeah.
So if you had one key takeaway, you know, you wanted, you know, people are running Facebook ads and this episode's coming to a close, what do you want them to go do?
I think that it's about coming up with, you know, trying to find ways to get into different neighborhoods, right? With our creative. And so it's just, you can go and do a, you know, I'm doing brainstorming sessions with my team in a way that I wasn't before, where we're just, you know, I've got, you probably can't see in this image, but I've got sticky notes all over my wall here from brainstorming sessions that we're doing. And so instead
really,
of just,
you're just trying to figure out different positioning.
Exactly. I'm just thinking more about positioning and more about diversity with my creative, because I know now that it actually matters, you know, where Meta places me. I'm going to tap into new audiences that way. And so that's one way to scale, right? You find an audience that's working, great. Sort of multiply and conquer that neighborhood as much as you can, but there's going to become a limit, right? There's a limit to that, to how many people you can reach in that neighborhood. And if you keep on putting, you know, together ads that look the same, Meta actually sees them as duplicate ads, basically. And so you may not be making the progress you think you are. Like, great, we came up with 15, 20 new ads this week. They all look really similar. Well, Meta is going to place them all in the same spot, and it doesn't want to serve duplicate ads. You might actually get less, you know, your ads are going to be served less if they all look the same. So I would just really stress creative diversity. You know, include a resource that has a bunch of questions that you can go through that we're using in our, in our brainstorming sessions. And
where do I get that?
I would just try and get creative about that.
I got, you know, you talked a lot about, hey, the creative diversity and, you know, thinking through it. And then like some of these questions and having, you know, custom GPTs, ChatGPT review it. What's the resource here? Give me something. You always have great resources for us.
Yeah, so I'll put together, I've got a PDF that has the questions that we got, you know, that we have put into our GPT. And so you could put those into your GPT as well and upload it, or just run through it yourselves as just sort of a brainstorming session. So that, I'll include that. It's going to be at producedept.co/USP for unofficial Shopify podcast. So producedept.co/USP. And it'll have two things in there. It'll have those questions that we go through, and then I'll also include just a map of our testing, our campaign testing structure.
Beautiful. I will also be grabbing that list myself and then turning it into a custom GPT. I would not mind playing with that. Kurt Pollack, thank you so much. If people wanted to learn more about you, where can they connect with you? Where should they go?
You can find me on Twitter at Kurt Bullock, KURTBULLOCK, or just at our agency website, producedept.co.
Kurt Bullock, Produce Department. Thank you so much.
Thanks a lot, Kurt.
Crowdfunding campaigns are great. You can add social proof and urgency to your product pre-orders while reducing risk of failure. But with traditional crowdfunding platforms, you're paying high fees and giving away control, all while your campaign is lost in a sea of similar offers. It can be frustrating. That's why we built Crowdfunder, the Shopify app that turns your Shopify product pages into your own independent crowdfunding campaigns. We originally created Crowdfunder for our private clients, and it was so successful, we turned it into an app that anyone can use. Today, merchants using Crowdfunder have raised millions collectively. With Crowdfunder, you'll enjoy real-time tracking, full campaign control, and direct customer engagement. And it's part of the Built for Shopify program, so you know it's easy to use. So say goodbye to high fees and hello to successful store-based crowdfunding. Start your free trial and transform your Shopify store into a pre-order powerhouse today. Search Crowdfunder in the Shopify App Store to get started.